We're going to go on to case 05-4109, Sound of Music versus Minnesota Mining. Mr. Fleischer, good morning.
Good morning. To please the court, I represent the plaintiff, appellant, Sound of Music in this case. We are appealing the grant of the court's summary judgment as to three claims. We believe there's factual issues as to all those claims, and in addition, we should have been allowed to file our amended complaint. I can start and address each of the claims briefly. Count one was our claim under the Illinois Franchise Act. The court granted summary judgment holding that the one-year statute of limitations applied and barred us from bringing our claim. We filed the claim on February 2, 1999. Thus, if the statute had started running prior to February 2, 1998, we would be barred. The defendant contends that the statute started running in November 97, which is when we received a letter of termination. When we received the letter of termination, the letter, which is Plaintiff's Exhibit 24, was to become effective December 31, 1998.
Now, if we read paragraph 15D to require consent by both parties to the contract, then why was Sound of Music so concerned about the length of the notice period? Why would it need 60 months' notice if it could simply thwart the termination by refusing to consent under 15D?
Your Honor, we believe that we did not know of the one-year period that we're talking about is just under the statute of limitations for the Franchise Act claim. It has nothing to do with the breach of contract claim. Under the Franchise Act claim, the statute gives us a right to have a one-year notice, one-year statute of limitations provision. So I'm just talking about the one-year statute of limitations for the count one, the contract. Count one, the Franchise Act claim now. You're talking about the breach of contract claim now.
Because that's my most pressing question.
Okay. Under the breach of contract claim, Your Honor, the breach of contract claim gave us this provision that's in here in the contract states that we have they have to give us the one-year notice, and the one-year notice runs from the date that they divest themselves from the business. At that point in time, we did not know that there was a franchise claim whatsoever, and we were arguing as to how long we would have under that period of time. We negotiated a one-year period at that point in time when we did the 1995 contract. But the one-year period, still there's a question under the franchise as to when the one-year period begins. Here's
my problem.
Okay.
That provision would be meaningless if you negotiated extensively on the 12-month notice with Sound of Music requesting 60 months notice and 3M refusing such a lengthy term. And it seems to me that if Sound of Music could thwart the termination by refusing to consent under 15D, it would not have fought for the 60 months notice. You wouldn't have needed the 60 months notice. So, I mean, that's my, you know, that's.
Your Honor, all I can say is that this was substantially negotiated and reviewed as far as the termination clause, but the termination clause does state that it could only be terminated if both parties agree. Whether that's a mistake or whether 3M wants to argue it's a mistake, the D provision does state that both parties have to agree to exercise that.
The contract clearly gives 3M the right to terminate the contract on 12 months' notice if it exits the business. And, I mean, your argument seems to be that the business is an undefined term and must mean 3M's entire Sound Products business.
Well, there's,
and I don't know why you would interpret the term in that manner.
Well, because there's two portions to the Sound I'm not saying their entire business. There's two portions of the Sound Project's business. In the letter of termination, they specifically, which is Plaintiff's Exhibit 24, they specifically said we're going to continue our other InTouch business. They had two different businesses. And in the letter of termination, they said we're terminating one business and we're keeping the other business.
Right, but when 3M got out of the business that it was in with Sound of Music, I mean, it ceased providing satellite broadcast services.
Now, at the beginning of the contract, Judge, in the first page of the contract, which is Plaintiff's Exhibit 9, it refers to the fact that there's two businesses. There's an equipment reception business and there's music services business.
Right, but that's not your business.
No, those.
I mean, at that business, they cease with providing satellite broadcast services. That business was the subject of your contract. And it just seems odd to me to even contemplate that the parties meant other line of business. I mean, if you could help me with it.
Well, because they defined the terms in the first provision of the agreement, they defined the term music services and equipment. In this clause, they actually used the term and D, equipment or music services. So we know that those are defined terms. Then they have a different phrase. They say, upon 3M's exit, not from equipment or music service, it says exit from the business. That's an undefined term that means something other than equipment or music service business. They didn't use a defined term. They used a different term at that point in time.
So what does that mean?
Well, what that means is that the IN project, this is a division that they have. This division has two different businesses within the division. When they sent us our letter of termination, they specifically said to us, we want you to know that we're going to continue our other InTouch business. We're only closing down one portion of our business. The letter of termination.
That term business was referring to yet a third business?
It was referring to the entire division of InTouch business. It certainly wasn't referring to the music or satellite business because they didn't use the term. If they had wanted to say music or satellite, it's a defined term they could have said. Upon 3M's exit from the music or equipment portion of the business.
Even though that's the only business they were in with you? In other words, they would not be able to get out of this contract until they got out of every business? I really have the problem.
Well, let me explain. For example, there's an assignment of assets clause, too. There's no way to do an assignment of assets. In the same phrase of exit from the business by sale, divestiture, it says assignment of assets. Assignment of assets has no application, that phraseology, to a portion of someone's business. Assignment of assets would be a composition, a bankruptcy, something that's been done as to an area of the company. They're using phrases here that's customary phrases that they're putting in here. Divestiture, what are they divesting? They say they're divesting in this clause. There's two different things. Exit from the business by sale, divestiture, assignment of assets, and then they talk about the music portion and equipment portion. Two different things. This is not an ambiguity. It states it as clearly. There's two different phrases. One equipment or music, the other one business, whatever that is. And when you're talking about trying to terminate a livelihood of a company that's a franchise, I just would state to the court that I don't think that the court needs to get into what the intent of the parties is.
Well, okay, let's go back to the termination letter, because you seem to be arguing that after Sound of Music received the termination letter, the company tried to find ways to continue its business through
Correct.
Other avenues. And that sounds like mitigation of damages. So what I'm wondering is, are you arguing that as long as a company works toward mitigation, damages have not yet accrued?
No, Your Honor. What I'm arguing here is that we have customers that have to receive satellite services. In the letter that they sent us in November 97, they say specifically, we've given you substantial time so you will be able to get new sources for the service. If we had gotten new sources for the service within the 13-month period, we have no damage. There is no damage whatsoever. The statute under the Franchise Act doesn't give us the right to sue for injunctive relief. It only gives us the right to damages. 3M said, our people will be in touch with you with additional information. We've given you plenty of time. You'll get other sources. There won't be any damage. Everyone believed at that point in time, 3M believed there wasn't any damage. It's not a question of the amount. It's not a question of mitigation. It's a question of immediately our client went out and looked for the other sources, found the other sources, and because of a set of other facts, our business suffered a diminution in value. That caused the damage. We didn't know that till March 98. That's when the statute started. If I had sued on November 26th, the day after we got this letter, and said, I don't care how much time you've given us, we believe that we're going to be damaged because we think that we can't get services. It's
going to
cost us too much.
Certainly, though, within that year. Let's go to month 11. Okay. Agreements were not in place, right, for other providers.
No, by month 11, we had an agreement by March. By month 4, we had an agreement in place for other providers.
Right. So at that point, you're saying you didn't know if the agreement was in place, you couldn't calculate potential damages?
No. From March 98, the statute gives us one year from the date that we know that we might, I'll even say might suffer damages. I'll even use that phraseology. We have 1 year. March 98 is when we went to a third source. 3M has said go to a third source. You should be able to get other satellite services. We did, but because of various facts, there was a diminution in value of our business. That's when we suffered the damage.
I guess I have trouble with the way you structure your calculation, because I think once you got notice from them that the business was going to be terminated, your 1 year ran then. And what I'm saying is if we interpret it that way, within that year, the contracts were not all in place, correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay, so then you would have been able to calculate damages. That's what I'm having trouble with. I don't understand why you couldn't calculate it. The contracts were not in place, and so if you lost that business, you'd know what that number was.
Well, let me explain. In November 97, the statute, the Franchise Act says we have 1 year to sue from the date that we know we have reason to know we have a claim. So the question is when we have reason to know we have a claim for damages.
Right.
They say the second we got this, saying we'll be in touch with you, we'll give you additional information, we're going to fulfill all our obligations, you'll have plenty of time, that at that moment we knew we had a claim for damages. That
means
we
had a potential claim.
Potential claim for
right.
damages. Well, you also have to assume if the statute is running, that means that we could have sued for damages.
Right.
You can't say the statute's running, but we couldn't sue for damages.
Right.
And I say that in November 97, we could not sue for damages. There's no way we could have gotten this letter which says, don't worry, you'll get other sources. And we immediately say, you know what, there's no way we can do this.
Right, but what I'm saying is you've got a whole year to do that. I understand you couldn't do it day one after you got the notice, but what I'm saying is if those alternative sources were not in place
right.
before that 1 year period ran, you could calculate damages.
But the 1 year, that's true during the 1 year, but the Illinois legislature says that we get an entire year. We don't have to file. We could have sued in November of that next year, in December of that year, but the legislature says we're going to give you, the franchisee, 1 year from the date that you have reason to know that you have a claim for damages. You can't sue for injunction. You have to have a claim for damages. It's a very limited statute, 1 year. It's limited even though it's a consumer-friendly statute, it's 1 year. I'm just saying that when someone sends out a notice, let's take the example that let's say this was a five-year notice. You have 5 years, we're going to terminate you in 5 years, and their argument is that you're out within a year unless you bring suit. You can't bring a suit for damages. The federal courts, all of the courts, are definite that you cannot bring a suit till you have reason to know that you have a good claim. The evidence here certainly is there's factual issues. When we were sitting with them and discussing with them, as they said to do, we're going to go out, get another source. If we get another source and we find another source, then we don't have any damages. We actually would work out if we went to Muzak. If Muzak had given us a price, it actually would have worked out to our favor. just because we're losing the source to get the satellite equipment doesn't necessarily mean that we're damaged. And in fact, their letter, if you read Plaintiff's Exhibit 24, it presupposes the reason why they're giving us this one-year period is so that we won't suffer any damages. Their claim is we didn't suffer any damages. Our claim is that when we went to MUSAC in March 98 and they said, you've terminated all these people all over the country, now we can buy you up for almost nothing, that we found out that we were suffering damages. And we sued within 1 year from March 98, which is what we're entitled to do under the Act. That's our Franchise Act claim. The amended complaint, I would
just
say...
You know, your light is, red light is on.
Okay. Any more questions? Thank you.
No, but I'm going to give you an extra minute or two for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay, Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
Good morning.
The issues that we see that are before the Court are really four in number, and I'll just go through them real fast and then cover each of them in more detail if I might. First is, did 3M breach the 1995 contract? And what is at issue here is not a 1998 contract, which was referred to in the district court's opinion, and which contract was terminated in 1993. What is at issue is only the 1995 contract.
Wait a minute. Did you just say...
A 1988 contract.
Oh, okay, because you said 1988.
I apologize. 1988. Second, can Sound of Music recover under the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act? And our position of that is quite simply no, for two very upfront reasons. First, there was never any franchise fee paid in the 1995 agreement. And second, they missed the one-year statute of limitations, which is provided and which is covered in complete detail in the Pyramid Control versus Siemens case.
You know, since we're talking about franchises, I mean franchise law, you argued that the Minnesota franchise law couldn't govern the Illinois activities involved in the case.
Yes, ma'am.
But you included a Minnesota choice of law provision in the contract, and it's very broadly written. It states that any claims or disputes or questions related to the agreement are governed by Minnesota law. And am I correct that that would include Minnesota franchise law? And if not, I'd sure like to know why not.
Well, even if it did, assume hypothetically that it did, the Minnesota Act still would
not...
Do
I just have to assume hypothetically, or...?
I don't think it does, because there is no relationship with the state of Minnesota and the operation of the business of the Sound of Music and the 3M relationship. Everything occurred here in the state of Illinois. It was an Illinois-based situation. The Illinois, if a Franchise Act were to apply, which we don't believe one does, it should be an Illinois Franchise Act simply because it is the state of Illinois that has the interest in this matter, not necessarily the state of Illinois. But in any event, assume hypothetically that the Minnesota Act did apply. The Minnesota Act has in it a provision that the requirements of that act may be waived if the party involved in it is not a Minnesota resident, and there's no doubt that the Sound of Music is an Illinois-based company, not a Minnesota company, and if the franchise activity, that is, the work being done, is in Minnesota, and there's no doubt the Sound of Music did its work here in the state of Illinois.
So what you're calling waiver here really is just a sentence stating that the Sound of Music is not a franchisee.
Yes, ma'am. And that's what the district court found.
Really waiver? I mean, doesn't it seem more like an estoppel claim to you?
I would have a hard time distinguishing the two of them there in my own mind. The third element in that, though, the Minnesota Franchise Act also has a dollar requirement in it for a franchise fee, and the 1995 contract that we have here simply has not, the Sound of Music hasn't raised any argument that in the 1995 contract there was a franchise fee that was to be paid. The argument that they make in it is somehow is a $2,400 payment for satellite service in the 1988, not the 1995 agreement, somehow constituted a franchise fee. And in all their papers, that's the only thing they refer to, and it's clear that that contract was terminated in 1993, and it's clear that the Sound of Music took no action under any franchise law at that time to attempt to enforce its rights. And so we have
maybe
here...
Because no franchise fee was paid.
That may well be. Or maybe no franchise fee was paid. Maybe they decided not to do it. I can't answer the question of why the Sound of Music in 1993 did not decide to go forward and seek some kind of legal redress if it thought it had a franchise under the 1988 agreement. But in any event, the court doesn't need to get to that because we're operating under the 1995 agreement, and there's nothing in there at all that covers a franchise fee in any size, shape, or form. Going into to a little, the last item on it is the argument of Sound of Music is somehow it should have been able to amend its complaint at the trial level in order to bring a Illinois Consumer Fraud Act. And we think that there simply is no evidence of any kind of consumer fraud in this case. Going back now to what I suggested at the start of my argument here on the four elements or four issues that we have, 15D gave 3M the right to get out, to terminate this agreement upon a 12-month written notice if it got out of the direct broadcast business, that is the DBS business. Our only relationship with Sound of Music was in the direct broadcast business. I think of the easiest thing, the kind of elevator music. You get in an elevator and you hear music. That's what this is. This direct broadcast business ended up into sort of a broad food services area of 3M under Dr. Sabongi. And another aspect of that you referred to earlier was the in-touch business, which is best exemplified that if you go to a fast food restaurant and you want to order something from your car, you speak into a microphone and the order is placed through there. That was a totally separate business. Sound of Music had nothing at all to do with that at all. We were only the direct broadcast business.
But what about this ambiguity he claims is in the contract, the reference to business that he says doesn't refer to either of those businesses?
The contract, if I may just pull it out real fast here, I had it. It makes it clear that the parties, now we've got four, A, B, C, and D, the parties, and some of them can get out under different reasons. For instance, under sub 15, sub D, C, in the event of the bankruptcy, certain things that happen. What we're dealing with here is sub D, and it says clearly under subpart D that upon 3M's exit from the business, the only business we had with the Sound of Music, Judge Williams, was the DBS, the direct broadcast business. We had no other relationship with them on anything. So to put a gloss on that it somehow refers to Scotch tape, maybe, quit making Scotch tape or something, it doesn't make sense. I mean, this contract had sophisticated parties on both sides. Sound of Music had its own lawyer there. It's clear from the evidence they negotiated, they went back and forth, they got under the previously terminated 1988 agreement, there was 90 days notice only, they got a full year notice. We complied with it. There's no doubt that the 3M company went out of the direct broadcast system satellite business. They were simply out. There's no doubt we gave the requisite 12-month notice. In fact, our notice was a little more than 12 months. We complied with our obligations under the agreement. And
then what about this argument he's making? I know you've addressed it in the brief, but it's been raised here in oral argument that they couldn't calculate any damages within that year of getting the notice from you.
Well,
go ahead.
Judge Williams, I think that is answered in the Pyramid Controls case, because the Pyramid Controls case talks about two things only under the Illinois statutory scheme. One is you have to have some notice of having a claim. Well, clearly the November 1995 termination notice was that notice. And second, the Pyramid Controls case also indicates that if you go and you seek advice from a lawyer, those two things right then starts the running of the statute, period. That's the way the statutory scheme is set up. In Pyramid Controls, the notice was given, a lawyer's advice was sought. Here, there's no doubt that in November of 1997, Sound of Music got the notice, and they also sought counsel in the same month. And those two things combined get the statute running. Going even further, what Sound of Music really is arguing is we didn't know what the quantum of damages were. But what they should be talking about is fact of damage. And that argument can be presented in any contract case you have, because really the so-called aggrieved party doesn't know what their damages are until they do the next step that's required under the law of the state of Illinois, and that is attempt to mitigate the damages. And what they're really talking about is we went out, we tried to mitigate our damages, and then if they had damages, we only were able to mitigate them at some point. But in my reading of Pyramid Controls versus Siemens, once they have notice of a claim, which they did on the termination, followed by communication and consultation with attorney, the clock starts ticking. And both of those events occurred in 1997. The last point I'd like to address is their argument on the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, which they claim that they should have been able to amend their complaint. They simply have not offered evidence at the trial level, and certainly not in their arguments here, that 3M did anything deceptive in this case in any size, shape, or form. The parties were above board throughout. They may have differences on opinion of what was done, and I can certainly understand the feeling of a customer or a party that is going to no longer have a certain contractual relationship. But the Sound of Music in 1995, when it's May 5, 1995, when it signed this agreement, had to presuppose that it was going to end. They make this long argument somehow that there was a promise to carry this into the 21st century. But for reasons known only to them, they signed a contract that by its very terms expired at midnight December 31, 1999. Which was the last instant of the 20th century. Under no way, under the contract they signed that they had legal counsel on, could they have gotten that contract into the 21st century. So I think all of that is without any real substance. I've run out of things to say, and I'll be glad to answer questions. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Unless you have
no.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. 2 minutes.
I'll be very brief. First of all, it's inconsistent to say that the anti-waiver clause in the Minnesota statute applies to non-Minnesota residents, and then say that the Minnesota Act doesn't apply to non-Minnesota residents. The Minnesota Act does apply to Minnesota residents. As I cited in my brief, it applies when an offer is made in the state of Minnesota, and then the Franchise Act applies. It also applies. We have a Minnesota provision here regarding choice of law. And thirdly, as far as the waiver. A statement that this is not a franchise is not a waiver. It's not a known waiver of rights. And I quoted case law on that issue. Reception fee. Counsel mistakenly says that there is no reception fee to be paid under the 95 contract. That's a mistake. There's nothing in this record to show that there wasn't a reception fee under the 95 contract. I did say in my brief that the exhibit that was attached doesn't have the reception fee in it, but if you look at Mr. Will's testimony at page 202 of his deposition at SEC, you'll see that there was a reception fee under the 95 contract also. That's why we contend that there's a franchise under the statute. As far as the amended complaint, consumer fraud is meant to take care of where somebody has signed a contract and there's something that's misled them. That's what consumer fraud is all about. They don't allege we were too late. The trial court just said this is not fraud. Well, fraud is misleading conduct, and we allege in our the amended complaint that they required us to buy this equipment. We paid for a few years to buy the equipment. The month after we finished paying the installment payments, they terminated us, and they told everybody who was buying this equipment and services that the services would go into the year 2000 after that. We received a plethora of information, and it was misleading because the services didn't go through the year after the year 2000. That's our argument under the Consumer Fraud Act. I've now run out of the extended time you gave me.
Thank you very much. Thanks to Mr. Fleischer and thanks to Mr. Schultz, and the case will be taken under advisement.